From the interim director, Employee Benefits Division, submitting an informational report regarding the dependent eligibility audits. This item was also referred to the Committee on Finance and Audit. At the March meeting cycle, a follow-up report was requested, informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee. Finance and Audit took no action on this item.
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Jerry Schrader, Interim Benefits Director.
Matt Hanchett, Benefits Manager.
This item was on the March agenda relating to dependent eligibility audit. And the Benefits Division was given the task of putting together an RFP process to proceed with this, and we carried it over to this session. We're asking that it be carried over to the May session for the same reason we asked last month, and that is the injunction on the repair bill and ramifications on this process. Now, we do anticipate coming in next month at the May session with the RFP plan and the timeline, and we are going to move ahead with it and not wait any longer. So that's our recommendation.
Mr. Hanchett, do you have
anything? No, just to echo some of the comments that I made for Finance Committee yesterday, Madam Chair. The biggest unknown is when we could actually execute the audit itself. So what we'll have to do to adjust is just make the RFP sufficiently vague to allow us to adjust to the timeline that gets dictated by the break of the impasse at the state.
I'll let your questions to the committee. Supervisor Rice.
Just a question. If you could kind of describe the overall objectives, but in particular, are you looking to identify, what is the process, I guess, that would be used to identify ineligible dependents?
Sure. Madam Chair, the typical process would be to first offer an amnesty period, allow employees to come forward without fear of reprisal or penalty, to self-report any dependents that may not be eligible for the plan. The primary goal isn't so much to punish people and cash them as it is to clean up our books and quit paying for them. The secondary piece to that, after the amnesty period is completed, is to start looking for ineligible dependents. The most common ground in the past has been out-of-date student status information. That's less of an issue now that the dependent age has been raised to age 27. But it does still hit the books there, verifying some dates of birth. The most common one that I think we'll be catching now is probably going to be marital status. We always have a number of legally separated spouses on our plan who would not otherwise be eligible. A legally separated spouse can't be covered under our plan, but it rarely gets reported back to us. That'd be captured across the active and the retired population.
Mm-hmm. And is there any issue of dual coverage, dual plans in place? If a dependent, for example, has coverage that they are under, is that an ineligible factor for our plan?
Madam Chair, we do not have any type of a working spouse rule or limitation if you have other coverage available to you, aside from the fact that we don't coordinate with our own coverage. If you're a county couple, both the husband and wife work for Milwaukee County, you can't be both a dependent and a primary member of the same plan.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How exactly does what's happening at the state affect this audit? I mean, we're basically just checking that people are being honest with the paperwork they're filling out, so how is that affected by what's happening on the other side? Couldn't we conduct this audit even if there were no changes proposed up there?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it affects it in terms of timing. With the amnesty period and the subsequent change period, if we're running that concurrent with our any time that we have any changes to our medical plan, we have to allow those 30 days to let people make any changes they want to. So if you get a lot of moving pieces on top, you have people changing their enrollment based on plan changes, or at least eligible to, after the amnesty period, getting identified by this audit, and you could potentially also have the vendor requesting payment for identifying people that were in the middle of changing of their own volition anyway, because we had to open up the window for them. So it's just much cleaner to have a basically to run the audit when you're not already changing the plan and not already moving people from one eligibility group to another.
Okay, so this is an anticipation that we would be doing changes based on what happens from the budget repair bill then. So it's kind of like a timing issue, because I mean we're well within our rights right now to go through and do this audit.
Right.
You know, there's nothing in a collective bargaining agreement or something that would prohibit it.
Right, that would be correct. We've already received policy direction from the board with regard to our retired members of DC 48. That would be a significant portion of the population we'd be looking at in terms of the legal separation audit, verifying marital status for eligibility. Another item that will be before you today would be seeking policy direction with regard to the active DC 48 members when and if this impasse is broken. All of those would be resulting in plan changes, which would require us to open up the eligibility and enrollment period for those groups.
And then you would do the audit after that enrollment period is closed.
Correct.
If it was reopened.
Right. So basically what we're doing is we're trying to have one period of change for all the changes rather than having multiple periods. It's just a better use of time and staff.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Supervisor Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you just briefly describe how the amnesty piece will work?
Sure. It varies a little bit from vendor to vendor, but generally speaking, there'd be a notice letter to all employees, basically letting them know that there will be an audit of dependent eligibility coming up, and it will tell them the date of the audit, and it will give them a window to self-report. It's really nothing more complicated than a notice period and asking them to come forward on their own and letting them know that if they do come forward, there won't be penalties. If they are caught afterwards, after the amnesty period, generally speaking, you put some language that would be subject to discipline up to and including termination.
Well, and I can understand where people don't necessarily clear everybody off right away, but if somebody has someone who is not supposed to be receiving these benefits and that individual receives thousands of dollars worth of coverage, and by doing this amnesty piece, are you saying then that the county will make no attempt to recoup any of that? Does the county have a responsibility to verify that they were eligible before we pay the benefits? Is there a shared responsibility? Or I guess I'm trying to understand how broad, if somebody was deliberately trying to defraud the county, would they be covered under the amnesty piece, or is it too hard to ferret it out, kind of?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in very general terms, right now, without an amnesty period, if we identify someone who's through anything other than just an honest mistake, basically attempting to defraud the county, we do recommend disciplinary action. We recommend termination. The Benefits Division doesn't have any direct authority to terminate anyone.
Right.
It goes back to the department heads for that decision, and if that would be true of the result of the amnesty period, too, we'd make recommendations and ask the departments to follow up on those recommendations. As far as how we treat people who are reporting items in amnesty and what amnesty means, that's at our discretion as the auditors, as the employers. Most commonly, it's total amnesty. You don't seek any financial remedy. You don't seek any kind of job action or employee disciplinary action. And again, the point to it is to get them off the books, clean it up moving forward. I've seen it done where you've given them amnesty for any employment action, but you've sought to recoup funds that were incorrectly paid over that time period. In my experience, employees are more likely to take their chances about getting caught if they know that they're going to have the financial penalty attached. So it just depends on what the goal is.
And then I guess my final question on this is, do you know in advance, or at least historically, that we've had any major problem with fraud in this area? Are we finding employees with a lot of, you know, costing the county tens of thousands or dollars, or has it been a relatively small issue, at least so far?
Madam Chair, I don't believe that we have widespread, deliberate, intentional fraud among our employees. I think a lot of it is born out of more of a negligence or ignorance than anything else. We have identified some fairly recently. We've sought disciplinary action and gotten it. But I don't believe this is, by any stretch of the imagination, a large percentage of the population. That said, it still makes sense to periodically capture them and clean them out, because even one person can incur very high claims in the hundreds of thousands of dollars if it's the wrong person.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Anyone else? All right. Thank you. I think this was just informational. Unless you want to do something else, the Finance Committee took no actions. Thank you. Madam Clerk, item 7.
From the Employee Benefits Work Group, requesting authorization to implement, as soon as permitted by law, wage and benefit policies for active employed members of ASCME District Council 48 by amending Section 17.10, 17.14, and 17.16 of the Milwaukee County Code of General Ordinances. This item was also referred to the Committee on Finance and Audit, who approved the amended resolution by a vote of 5-0.
Good morning. Why don't you go ahead and identify yourselves, and we can start with a brief report from you.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Mark Grady from Corporation Counsel.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Supervisors. I'm CJ Polity, Interim Assistant Fiscal and Budget Administrator.
And you stepped up to that position after John Ruggini left.
I did, as of Monday.
Welcome, Mr. Grady.
I'm here this morning, Chairman, Madam Chair, as the representative of the Employee Benefits Work Group. Just to remind folks, we have a wide variety of membership of that committee, or that group, created.